This is Dan from Karate Cafe. You are listening to the Practical Defense Podcast with Alex Haddix, where he punches your brain face with his mind fists.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix, and this is episode 269, Home Video Surveillance Cameras, Part 3. This week, we conclude our discussion on home security cameras. We're going to take a look at indoor cameras versus outdoor cameras, wiring considerations, and windows. There are two major types of cameras for home security, those designed for indoor use and those designed for outdoor use. The differences can be pretty significant, and they should be used according to specifications. First, the casings for outdoor cameras are much hardier. They're designed to withstand a wide range of weather conditions. The cases are hardened against wind, water, and dust, and the lenses are often protected with shields, and the infrared illuminators are of a different type and strength. These are the reasons for the often significant cost difference between the indoor and outdoor devices. Now, sure, I have seen indoor cameras mounted on the exterior of homes, and they might last for a season or two, but in my mind, the resident has just wasted a lot of money on a device that will be destroyed by the weather. Also, the sensors are often set differently for indoor and outdoor cameras. Indoor sensors are not as sensitive, and sometimes preset not to trigger on smaller movements caused by cats and medium-sized dogs. Outdoor cameras are more sensitive and often have more options for lighting, movement, trigger thresholds, and distance of view. Now, outdoor cameras are commonly more difficult to install than indoor cameras. Nearly every outdoor camera I've seen requires hardwiring to your computer network. There are few outdoor cameras that support Wi-Fi connections, and I'm really not certain why. It's a pain to run both power and Ethernet cables to cameras. Some models, like the ones I installed, use power over Ethernet, or PoE. This means that one cable carries both the signal and power to the camera. PoE is really cool and adds a huge amount of convenience, but can add some cost to the system. There are two ways to set up PoE. The first is to add a PoE injector to the Ethernet line. This is a box that sits on the Ethernet cable that adds power to the wire. So the cable comes out of the camera, into the PoE injector, and then from the injector into your network hub or switch. The cost of the injector can be anywhere from $30 to $70. Now, not all cameras that need or use PoE come with an injector. When you make your purchase, check to see what comes in the box. There may be a hidden cost in there, especially on some of the bargain cameras. The cleanest but most expensive method is to use a network switch that already supports PoE. Now, most of these devices are made for businesses, and they are a lot more expensive than the average switch. TrendNet and Cisco make some consumer-grade switches with PoE. Around the office, PoE switches are used to power devices like IP phones, wireless access points, some Bluetooth devices, as well as cameras. When wiring things, only having to run one cable that doubles as power and connectivity is really nice. So switching to indoor cameras, they are most commonly wireless, and they're small and they're easy to install. All you need is a nearby power source. I've seen some models advertised that run on batteries, but I am really kind of skeptical of how well those work. I imagine they have to remain in sleep mode until something triggers them, or the battery would die in just a few hours. You can't maintain a video feed over Wi-Fi for very long on a battery. I've already covered most of the features of the indoor camera in the comparison and contrast with the outdoor camera just a bit earlier. I did mention that indoor cameras should not be mounted on the outside of the home. However, that does not stop someone from putting a camera up to a window on the inside facing outwards. I've done this in a few places around my home, and it has worked well over the past couple of weeks. There are a couple of nuances that must be addressed if the indoor cameras are used in this manner. First, there must be a good external light source for night coverage. the illuminators built into the camera will not work well. The light will reflect off the glass of the window back into the camera, creating huge blind spots. Daytime coverage hasn't been a problem for me using this method, at least so far. It just took a little bit of work to get the system to function well at night. Now next, there is little to no deterrent factor. A camera behind a window is far less apparent, and therefore less of a visual deterrent to would-be home invaders. Now on the other hand, by the time the camera's seen, the trespasser is already caught on video. So I guess it really depends upon the goal, but I always stress deterrence over capture. Now the last thing I'll cover in this series is cameras connected to a local recorder or DVR. Now in the past two episodes, I may have sounded like I didn't like cameras connected to DVRs, and that's not entirely true. They do have their place in a comprehensive layered protection system. A good aspect to the local system is that space is not an issue. With cameras that upload their clips to the cloud, the space has to be paid for, and when a limit's reached, it's either buy more space or lose any more uploads until the account is reset at the beginning of the next cycle. A local system doesn't care how many times it triggers, although it does mean a lot of time to review footage. Some local systems just keep a running cycle of live feeds in a continuous loop. They can store 4, 6, or 8 hours of continuous feed. The theory is, if a break-in occurs, the resident will know within that amount of time and be able to save the footage before it's overwritten. Most of the indoor DVR cameras I've seen are Wi-Fi, which makes installation easier. Now again, all that is needed is a close power source. Some of the systems save to a base station with a built-in hard drive and allow remote viewing through the home's firewall via web or mobile phone app. Others save the video to a SD card built into the camera, which makes it a bit more difficult to watch the footage. Still others connect to a signal receiver on your computer, and then your computer becomes the DVR. And finally, there are the systems where the DVR connects to your TV, so there are no computers required at all. All of these different options are what make the choice so challenging. These are not expensive devices either. I would love to test each of the systems, but I don't have the thousands of dollars and weeks of time it would take to scratch the surface on all the models and combinations available. Now, the greatest concern with these local DVRs is that they can be stolen when the home is broken into. Computers are hot items for theft, and if it's a smash and grab, like my recent burglary was, the computer with the surveillance footage may be stolen as well, leaving no video evidence behind. So with DVRs, you might consider hiding them someplace safe that will not overheat or have a risk of fire. But you still need access to the footage, and that might be tricky. So I will close with an interesting recommendation from Stuart in North Carolina. He writes, "If you have some old smartphones with cameras gathering dust, there are apps like Presence and Manything which can turn them into surveillance cameras. I'm not certain how it would work or affect your bandwidth usage on your mobile phone carrier. Something to consider." But, you know, that will do it for this week and this discussion on home security video cameras. Be certain to check out my feature article in the November issue of Taekwondo Times magazine. It's on the subject of defensive mindset and tactics for responding to a criminal attack. The title of the article is Occupy Their Space, and you can find it on page 25. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. If you're thinking about a career in private security in California, we have a fully accredited and fully online program. We have the best material and the lowest prices. Visit our website at palladiumonlinesecurity.com for all the details. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@palladium-education.com. You can also leave us a voicemail on the Practical Defense tip or comment line at 805-203-6586. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com.
Website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, tips, comments, or topic suggestions, send us an email at podcast@palladium-education.com. That's podcast@palladium-education.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 805-203-6586. I look forward to hearing from you. Practical Defense Podcast and theme music are copyright Palladium Education Incorporated.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palladium.